The wall was missing. Wires and wood hung in the gaping hole that remained. Aaron ran up the steps first. "Mrs. Tisdale?" he called. "Mrs. Tisdale, are you all right?" Call followed, leg aching. The furniture was knocked over, a coffee table splintered. A love seat was on fire, flames rising from a blackened corner. Mrs. Tisdale lay on the floor, a terrible gash across her chest. Blood soaked the rug under her. Call stared in horror. Mixed in with the blood were gleaming bits of metal. Aaron dropped to his knees. "Mrs. Tisdale?" Her eyes were open, but she didn't seem to be able to focus her gaze.
"Children,"
she said in a whispery, awful voice.
"Children, they're after you."
Call remembered a little bit about healing magic. He'd seen Alex use it to heal Drew's broken ankle once, drawing up binding and healing powers from the earth. He bent down next to Aaron, trying to summon up what he could. If he could heal her, then maybe his magic was good for more than Alistair thought. Maybe he was good for more than Alistair thought. Maybe he was good. Pressing his fingers gently over her collarbone, he directed energy into her. He tried to feel it coming up from the ground, tried to think of himself as a conduit. But after a moment, she pushed his hand away.
"It's too late for that,"
Mrs. Tisdale said.
"You're the ones who can still get away. You need to run. Call, I was there the night you thought you lost Havoc. I was the one who chained him up. I know what's at stake."
Call pulled back from her, reeling.
"What is she talking about?" Tamara asked. "What are you talking about, Mrs. Tisdale?"
"It's just an elemental," Aaron said. "We can get rid of it. We can help you." He looked up wildly at Tamara and Jasper.
"Maybe we should call for help from the Magisterium."
"No!"
The old woman gasped.
"Don't you know what that creature is? Its name is Automatones. It is an ancient and terrible monster. It was captured by the mages of the Magisterium hundreds of years ago."
Blood had appeared at the corners of her mouth. She drew a ragged breath.
"If it is here now, it's because those mages released it to hunt you down. To kill you."
With a shudder, Call remembered Master Rufus's lecture on the elementals trapped beneath the Magisterium, how terrifying they were, how unstoppable. "To hunt Alistair down, you mean?" Jasper asked.
"It broke into this house,"
she hissed.
"It demanded that I tell it where you were. Not Alistair, you four."
Her eyes fixed on Aaron.
"You had better run, Makar."
Aaron's face had gone blank with shock.
"Run from the Magisterium? Not the enemy?"
Her mouth curved up into a strange smile.
"You can never outrun the enemy of death, Aaron Stewart," she said,
and though she seemed to be speaking to Aaron, she was looking at Call. He stared back at her, as her eyes went blank.
"Look out!"
Tamara screamed. The metal monster, Automatones, lurched into the house through the broken wall. It was truly huge now. It smashed upward with its flat, manhole-size hands, ripping away at the ceiling, tearing a hole between the upstairs and the bottom floor to clear a space for itself. Call yelped and fell sideways, narrowly missing being smashed by a falling dresser. The piece of furniture broke open on the floor, scattering clothes. Suddenly, a sheet of fire appeared, like a living wall of flame, scorching the floor and igniting what was left of the ceiling. Jasper was holding the fire in place with obvious effort as Automatones roared and snapped.
"Go!" Jasper said to Call. "Run! I'll follow!"
Call felt bad about having called him a coward. Pushing himself up from the floor, he staggered toward the back of the house. Aaron and Tamara followed. Tamara had summoned a ball of fire which glowed in her hand. She whipped her head back, braids flying, toward where Jasper stood.
"Come on, Jasper," Aaron called. "Now!"
Jasper released his wall of fire and ran toward them, the metal elemental racing after. Tamara threw her summoned flame at the monster's maw as Jasper staggered out onto the lawn with Cole. Jasper was clearly exhausted from the effort he'd put out raising the fire screen. He made it a few feet onto the lawn and then collapsed. Cole took a step toward him, but had no idea what to do. There was no way he could carry Jasper and run. He could barely run without the weight of a whole extra person on his shoulders. Tamara ran over the lawn, Aaron just behind her. Behind them came Automatones, rearing and clawing as the flames boiled around it. Jasper's fire had clearly caught some of the furniture alight, and now the curtains and probably the walls were burning. The whole farmhouse was going to go up like a torch.
"Jasper!"
Cole reached for Jasper's arm and tried to at least pull him upright. Jasper made it onto his knees and then let out a yowl of terror. Cole spun around and saw the metal elemental rising up over them, blotting out the sliver of moon. Its hands were reaching down. They looked like huge metal crab pincers, about to close on Cole and Jasper, about to slice them in half. Cole remembered being in his father's awful workroom the past summer, remembered the rage he felt and how he'd looked at Alistair and just pushed. Now he tried to summon up all the rage and fear and awfulness he was holding inside and push it at Automatones. The monster flew back, emitting a noise that sounded like a rusty car being pulled apart. The noise turned to a raging growl as Automatones turned toward Tamara and Aaron. Aaron stepped in front of Tamara, raising his hand, but the monster swept him out of the way as if he were a pesky fly and grabbed for Tamara, lifting her up into the air.
"Tamara!"
Cole started to run toward the elemental, forgetting for a second that it was terrifying, that it was huge, that it was deadly. In his mind, he saw the metal pincer closing around Tamara, crushing her in its grasp. He was vaguely aware that Aaron was running and yelling too, that Tamara was struggling but silent in the creature's claw. All of a sudden, Automatones gave a lurch and a stumble. Tamara pulled free, tumbling onto the grass. The elemental writhed around, and Cole saw that Havoc had leaped onto its back, his chaos-ridden claws sinking into the metal skin, teeth tearing. The noise of ripping metal filled the night. But the creature shook itself, and Havoc lost his balance, legs scrabbling desperately at the air. He was holding on by his teeth, and then wasn't holding on at all. He flew toward the house, toward the fire, whimpering as he fell. Summoning air, heedless of the elemental or the fight, Cole focused on his wolf. He concentrated on forming a soft cushion of circling wind to catch Havoc. Dimly, he heard the creature screeching close to him. Dimly, he understood that he was putting the rest of them in danger to make sure his pet was unharmed, but he didn't care. Havoc fell into Cole's air magic as if it were a net, bouncing a little, his paws flailing, his coruscating eyes wide. Slowly, Cole lowered the wolf to the ground, carefully, carefully. That was when the elemental hit him. It felt like being smashed by a giant wave. He heard Tamara yell his name, and then he was flying backward, hitting the ground with enough force to send a shockwave through his body. He rolled over, spitting out dirt and grass, and saw the metal elemental looming over him. It looked enormous, as big as the sky its body blotted out. Call struggled to get to his feet, his bad leg wobbling, but fell back into the grass. In the distance, he could see Tamara running toward them, ropes of fire swinging from her hands, but he knew she was too far away to get to him in time. Automatones was already swaying down toward him, its toothy jaws wide. Call clutched at the dirt, trying to reach into it to summon up earth magic, but there was no time. He could smell the stink of metal and rust as the elemental opened its mouth to swallow him. Stop! The elemental jerked its head back. Call swung around to see Aaron standing behind him, his hand outstretched. Shining in his palm was a cloud of oily darkness, spilling upward. The expression on his face was one Call couldn't remember seeing before. His eyes burned like brands, and a grimace pulled his face into something that looked disturbingly like a smile. The oily black nothingness flew from Aaron's hand and hurtled straight down Automatones' throat. For a moment, nothing changed. Then the creature began to vibrate, metal clanking against metal. Call stared. The elemental looked as if it were being crushed by a huge, invisible hand, its metal hide being sucked inward. It opened its mouth, and Call saw the oily blackness fuming and bubbling inside it. He realized what was happening. The elemental was collapsing in on itself, each joint and screw, each plate and motor, drawn into the expanding void that Aaron had hurled down its throat. There was a hand on Call's shoulder, and Aaron was drawing him up to his feet. The scary expression was gone from Aaron's face. He just looked grim, watching as Automatones gave a last howl and vanished into a speck of darkness that singed across the air. "What happens to it?" Jasper asked, running up. "Where is it now? Is it dead?" Call looked back at the burning building, at the wreckage of cars. He didn't care where Automatones had gone. The important thing was that they were all safe. "It's in the void," Aaron said, his voice flat.
"It won't come back."
"Come on," said Tamara. "We need to get away from the fire."
They began to make their way back toward the barn, Havoc running ahead of them. The air was filled with smoke, and the glow from the burning fire behind them turned the sky as light as day.
"What we need to do is go back to the Magisterium," Jasper said breathlessly. "Show them what we found. Call's dad has been in direct contact with the enemy's servants, remember? He's going to bring them the Alkahest. We need help."
"We're not going back to the Magisterium," Aaron said.
His voice was still the same, flat and rigid. Call had the sense that he was holding back whatever he was feeling, tamping it down hard.
"They sent that thing after us."
"After Alistair, you mean?"
Tamara corrected. "You don't believe what that old woman said, do you?"
"Yeah, I do."
"She's got no reason to lie," Call agreed. Now Aaron's voice started to crack a little.
"If they didn't send it, why did it attack Mrs. Tisdale? Why did it attack us? It ought to have been given instructions not to hurt us.
Maybe they decided that if they couldn't get us back, it was better to have us dead than in the enemy's hands," said Jasper. They all looked at him in surprise.
"It's the sort of thing the Assembly would do," he added, with a shrug.
"I thought you wanted to go back," Call said.
"I do, but you guys have messed up royally."
Jasper rolled his eyes at Call like he was an idiot, an expression Call was very familiar with.
"The longer we're away, the more convinced they're going to become that they have to cut their losses. Wipe out Aaron first, then wipe out us so there are no witnesses, and it's just a tragedy. If Constantine Madden got hold of Aaron, he could kill him. Or he could brainwash him. Maybe they're afraid of that. Maybe they're afraid that losing Aaron to Constantine could lose them the war."
"Not having Aaron would lose them the war," said Tamara. He's the Makar.
They had reached the barn. Jasper's face looked like cut stone in the flickering light.
I don't think you understand how they do math.
Enough,
said Cole, turning to face the others.
You guys go back to school. I think I can stop my father so long as I can get to him in time. I have to talk to him. I have to try. But this is getting too dangerous for you to come along.
They'll never get it, he thought. My dad wants his son back. He thinks if he trades the Alkahest to Master Joseph, Joseph can fix me, can make me Colum Hunt again. But Master Joseph's tricking him, trying to lure him in. He'll probably kill him once he gets the Alkahest. But Cole couldn't tell them that. Any of that.
You can't outrun the enemy of death.
No way,
Tamara said, crossing her arms over her chest.
It's not safe for you to go. It's not safe for any of us. You don't even know where Alistair's headed.
I think I do, actually,
Cole said. He slid the barn door open and limped inside. The rest of them, even Havoc, waited in the doorway as he retrieved Master Joseph's letters. When he returned, he held one up to the light.
There are numbers under Master Joseph's name, he said.
In every letter.
Yeah, probably the date, Jasper said.
Cole read the numbers off.
45, 1661, 67, 2425.
That's not a date, except maybe on Mars, said Tamara, crowding closer.
It's coordinates, said Cole.
Latitude and longitude. That's how my dad used to program the GPS in his car. It tells you how to find something. Joseph is telling my dad where he is.
Then we know where we're going, said Aaron. We just need to find something we can plug the coordinates into.
Here, Tamara said, taking out her phone.
But when she touched the screen, it didn't come on.
Oh, I guess I'm out of charge.
A computer in any internet cafe would work, said Cole, folding up the papers.
But there's no we. I'm doing this alone.
We're not leaving you alone, and you know it, Aaron said. He held up a hand against Cole's protest.
Look, by the time we get back to school, your father could already have reached Master Joseph. There might not be enough time to do anything, even if we could convince the mages we knew what we were talking about.
And if we go after Joseph and get the Alkahest back, then we go back in glory, Tamara added.
Besides, they already sent a monster after us. Until we know whether we can trust them, the only way is forward.
Cole looked over at Jasper.
You don't have to come.
He actually felt bad now for having dragged Jasper into this mess.
Oh, I'm coming, Jasper said. If monsters are hunting us, I'm sticking with the Makar.
How can the mages of the Magisterium be the good guys if they'd send a monster to murder us just for running away? Aaron asked.
We're kids.
I don't know, Cole said. He was starting to worry that there weren't any good guys, just people with longer or shorter evil overlord lists. Tamara sighed and scrubbed a hand through her hair.
Right now we need to find a town, somewhere where we can get new clothes and some food. We look like we set ourselves on fire and then rolled around in the mud. We don't exactly blend in.
Havoc, hearing the words, roll around in the mud, began to do just that. Cole had to admit Tamara was right. They were dirty, and not like actors in movies who had one artistic smear of dirt across a cheekbone. Their uniforms were ripped and bloody and soaked with oily metal elemental goop.
I guess we start walking, said Jasper, sounding dispirited.
We're not going to walk, said Aaron.
We're going to drive.
There are 300 cars here.
Yeah. But most of the ones that haven't been eaten don't exactly work, Cole pointed out, and the few that do work don't have keys waiting for us.
Come on, said Aaron. I don't have a dad in prison for nothing. I think I can hotwire one of these.
He strode off toward the field of cars with a confident set to his shoulders.
That's our Makar,
said Jasper. Chaos magic and Grand Theft Auto.
I thought you said your dad ran off,
Cole said to Aaron, running after him,
and that you didn't know where he was.
Aaron shrugged. I guess no one likes to admit their dad is in jail. Right then, an imprisoned dad didn't seem like the worst thing to Cole, but he knew better than to say it. Cole helped Aaron select the least broken car he recalled Alistair buying. A Morris Minor, its swooping exterior, a deep emerald green that contrasted with its red leather seats. It was one of Alistair's newer cars, manufactured in 1965, and unlike lots of the others, didn't need a new engine.
It's still not fast, Cole warned, like we probably need to stay under 40 miles per hour even on the highway. And it doesn't have a GPS. He might have installed one eventually, but he didn't get around to it.
What happens if we don't stay under 40 miles per hour? Tamara asked.
Cole shrugged.
Maybe it explodes, I don't know.
Great, Jasper said.
Can any of you numbskulls drive?
Not really, Aaron said, crouching down under the seat, cutting wires with Cole's knife and wrapping them back together in a new combination.
How can you know how to hotwire a car but not drive one? Jasper asked, heaving a massive sigh.
That's a good question,
Aaron muttered, sticking his head out from under the seat. He looked sweaty and a little shaky.
Maybe you should take it up with my dad. He didn't get around to teaching me before he got locked up.
I've driven golf carts before, said Tamara. How different could it be?
The engine sprang to life, revving under Aaron's capable hands.
I'll drive, said Cole, whose father had shown him how.
Sort of. He was in enough trouble that driving an unregistered, uninsured vehicle without a license was hardly going to make much of a difference. Besides, he was the enemy of death, an outlaw, a rebel. Breaking the law should be the mere tip of his iceberg of evil. Havoc barked as if agreeing with him. Havoc had taken the front passenger seat and didn't seem inclined to let anyone else have it. Aaron leaned against the hood, looking exhausted. He glanced in Cole's direction, but his eyes didn't seem to focus.
It's weird, huh? Everyone expecting me to be a hero and my father a convicted criminal.
Well, since we're tracking down my dad because he stole some kind of magical artifact, I'm not exactly in a position to judge.
Cole smiled, but Aaron didn't seem to notice.
It's just, I don't know. Constantine Madden was a bad Makar. Maybe I'll turn out bad, too. Maybe it's in my blood.
Cole shook his head, so surprised by the thought that at first he didn't know how to respond.
No, I don't think that's you.
Come on, everyone, get in the car, Tamara said. Aaron, are you okay?
Aaron nodded, climbing unsteadily into the back seat. Jasper and Tamara loaded the Morris's trunk up with their remaining stuff. Thankfully, since they'd gotten out of bed to fight automatones, their backpacks had remained safely in the barn. Now all Cole had to do was not crash. Alistair had let him drive before, steering one of the old cars when Alistair was towing it, or driving around the farm to park a new acquisition, but none of that was the same as driving all by himself. Cole got in and adjusted the driver's seat, shoving it forward so his shoes reached the pedals.
Gas, he told himself. Brakes.
Then he adjusted the mirrors because that's what Alistair always did in a new car. He hoped it would give Aaron and Tamara and even Jasper confidence that Cole knew what he was doing. But the familiar movements made him think of his dad, and a helpless panic settled over him. He was never going to be the person his father loved. That person was dead.
Let's go, Jasper said, climbing into the back seat.
Tamara climbed in after him. Apparently, they'd decided to let Havoc keep shotgun.
If you even know how to drive.
I know how,
Cole said, letting out the clutch and sending the car rocketing down the road.
The Morris Minor clearly needed new shocks. Every bump in the road threw the kids into the air. It also guzzled gas so fast that Cole knew they were going to have to make a lot of stops. He clung to the wheel, squinted at the road, and hoped for the best. In the back seat, Aaron fell into a kind of fitful sleep, not seeming to mind the roughness of the ride. He thrashed around a little but didn't wake.
"Is he okay?"
Cole called into the back. Tamara touched the inside of her wrist to Aaron's forehead.
"I don't know. He doesn't have a fever, but he's kind of clammy."
"Maybe he expended too much magic," Jasper said. "They say the cost of using void magic is high."
It took them 20 minutes to find the edge of a small town. Cole pumped gas into the Morris, while Tamara and Jasper went into the station to pay.
"Do you think he noticed how weird you looked?"
Cole asked when they came back. They were, after all, wearing burned, muddy clothes. And they were kids, all barely 13, definitely too young to be driving cars. Jasper shrugged.
"He was watching television. I don't think he cared about anything except that we paid."
"Let's go," said Tamara, climbing into the back to sit next to the still-sleeping Aaron, "before he thinks about it."
Tamara used the map to direct Cole through the town until they came to a closed sporting goods store with a big, empty parking lot. Cole, very slowly and carefully, pulled into a vacant spot. Aaron was still asleep. Tamara yawned.
"Maybe we should let him rest," she said.
"Yeah," Jasper said muzzily.
"You're right. I am totally awake and alert in every way, but chaos magic is hard on Makars."
Cole rolled his eyes, but he was as exhausted as the rest of them. He allowed himself to doze, leaning across the center console to pillow his head on Havoc. A moment later, he'd fallen into a fitful sleep. When he woke up, Aaron was awake and Tamara was asking him if he was okay, and lemony daylight was filtering through the window.
"I don't know," Aaron said. "I feel a little weird. And dizzy."
"Maybe you need food,"
Cole said, stretching. Aaron grinned as Jasper and Tamara climbed out of the car.
"Food does sound good."
"Stay here, boy,"
Cole said to Havoc, scratching behind his ears.
"No barking. I'll get you a sandwich."
He left the car window cranked open in case Havoc needed fresh air. He hoped nobody tried to steal the car, mostly for the thief's sake. No regular person, even a car thief, was prepared for a surprise faceful of angry, chaos-ridden wolf. The street had a few other shops, including a used clothing store that Tamara pointed to with great enthusiasm.
"Perfect," she said. "We can pick up some new clothes. Aaron, if you don't feel up to it..."
"I'll be fine," he said.
He still looked exhausted, but managed to grin anyway.
"No amount of clothing is going to make that car of yours stand out less," said Jasper, who knew how to bring down any mood.
"We can buy it a scarf," Cole told him.
The store was full of racks of used and vintage clothes, and all sorts of second-hand knick-knacks that Cole recognized from his dad's forays to antiques fairs and junk shops. 3 Singer sewing machine stands had been turned into a counter. Behind it sat a woman with short white hair and purple cat-eye glasses. She glanced up at them.
"What happened to you four?"
she asked, eyebrows going up.
"Mudslide?" Aaron said, although he didn't sound very certain.
She winced as though either she didn't believe him, or she was generally disgusted with them in her store, tracking mud and touching things with sooty fingers, maybe both. It didn't take too long for Cole to find the perfect outfit, though. Jeans, like the kind he'd worn back home, and a navy blue t-shirt proclaiming, "I don't believe in magic," with a squashed fairy in the lower right-hand corner. Aaron started laughing when he saw it.
"There is something seriously wrong with you," he said.
"Well?"
You look like you're on your way to yoga class, Call said.
Aaron had picked out gray sweatpants and a shirt with a yin-yang symbol on it. Tamara had found black jeans and wore a big, silky tunic that might be a dress over it. Jasper had somehow discovered khakis, a blazer in his size, and mirrored sunglasses. The total for the clothes came to about $20, which had Tamara frowning thoughtfully and counting out loud. Jasper leaned past her and gave the cat-eye glasses lady his most charming smile.
"Can you tell us where we can get sandwiches?" he asked.
"And internet?"
"Bits and Bytes, 2 blocks down Main," she said, and pointed at their heap of discarded, muddy green uniforms.
"I'm guessing I can toss these. What kind of clothes are they, anyway?"
Call gave the clothes an almost regretful look. Their uniforms branded them as magisterium school students. Without them, all they had were their wristbands.
"Karate uniforms," he said. "That's how we got dirty. Karate chopping ninjas."
"In a mudslide," Aaron interjected, sticking to his story. Tamara dragged them out of the store by the backs of their shirts. Main Street was mostly deserted. A few cars drove up and down, but nobody gave them a second look.
"Karate chopping ninjas in a mudslide?"
Tamara gave Aaron and Call a dark look.
"Could you guys try to lay low?"
She stopped in front of an ATM.
"I've got to get some money out."
"Speaking of lying low, I've heard they can trace your ATM card," said Jasper.
"You know, using the internet."
Call wondered if he'd thrown away his phone for nothing.
"The police can," said Aaron, "not the magisterium."
"How do you know?"
"Well, we have to risk it," said Tamara. "That was all the rest of our cash, that $20, and we're going to need more gas and food."
Still, her hand shook a little as she took out the money and stuffed it in her wallet. Bits and Bytes turned out to be a sandwich shop with a row of computers where you could rent internet time, $1 an hour. Aaron went to buy sandwiches while Call logged in. He typed latitude and longitude into Google, which took him to a page that calculated both from an address. He pressed the reverse lookup button and entered the numbers he had. Then he held his breath. The map showed a location quickly enough, although there was no address associated with it, just the words, Monument Island, Harpswell, Maine. According to the map, there were no roads on it and no houses. He doubted there was a ferry either. Even worse, when he typed in the directions, the computer said it would take 15 hours to drive there. 15 hours! And Alistair had a head start.
What if he was already there?
What if he'd taken a plane? For a moment, terrible panic overwhelmed Call. The screen in front of him flickered. The lights shuddered. Jasper looked in Call's direction, sneering.
"Maybe someone went through the gate of control too soon,"
he said under his breath.
"Easy."
Aaron put a hand on Call's shoulder, steadying him. Call stood up abruptly, fighting for breath.
"I've got to..."
"You've got to what?"
Aaron looked at him strangely.
"Print," Call said.
"I've got to print... the directions." He staggered over to the register.
"Do you guys have a printer?"
The girl behind the counter nodded.
$3 a page, though."
Call glanced at Tamara.
"Can we?"
She sighed.
"It's a necessary expense. Go ahead."
Call sent the directions to print. Now all three of them were looking at him strangely.
"Is something wrong?"
Aaron said.
"It's in Maine," Call said.
15 hours away, by car." Aaron looked up from his ham and provolone sandwich with a shocked expression.
"Seriously?"
"Could have been worse," Jasper said, surprising Call.
"Could have been Alaska."
Tamara glanced around and then back at Call. Her brown eyes were very serious.
You sure you want to do this?
I'm sure I have to, he said. She took a bite out of her sandwich.
Well, eat up, everyone, she said. I guess we're going on a road trip to Maine.
After lunch, they got back to the car, dumping their backpacks in the back. Call walked Havoc and fed him two roast beef sandwiches and then tipped a bottle of water so he could lap at it. The chaos-ridden wolf ate and drank with surprising daintiness. Call drove with Tamara acting as co-pilot while Jasper and Aaron pillowed their heads on Havoc's furry back and napped. Jasper must have been pretty exhausted to deign to sleep on a chaos-ridden animal. Hours passed like this.
You know you can get arrested for going under the speed limit, too, said Tamara, her warm ginger ale in the cup holder beside her.
She was unbraiding her hair, brushing it out, as it blew around with the breeze of her open window. Tamara almost always kept her hair in braids, and Cole was surprised by how long it was unbraided, black and shiny, and hanging to her waist. Call pressed his foot harder on the gas, and the Morris lurched forward. As the speedometer needle started to edge up, the car began to shudder.
Tamara said, maybe we should take a chance on the cops.
He gave her a quick smile.
Do you really think the Magisterium sent that monster after us? I don't think Master Rufus would, Tamara said, hesitating.
When she spoke again, the words came out in a rush.
But I'm not sure about anyone else. It just doesn't make sense to me. Call, if there was something you knew, you'd tell us, right?
What do you mean?
Nothing, she said, her fingers nimbly working her hair back into a single long braid.
Call focused on the road, on the blur of lines, and keeping his distance from other cars.
What's the next exit? He asked her. We need gas.
Call, Tamara said again. Now she was playing with her wristband. He wished she'd stop fidgeting.
You know, if there was something you wanted to tell me that was a secret, I'd keep it. I wouldn't tell anyone.
Like you didn't tell anyone about my dad? Call said, immediately regretting it. Tamara's eyes went wide and then angry.
You know why I did that, she said. He tried to steal the Alkahest. He was putting Aaron in danger, and things turned out even worse than we thought. He didn't have good intentions.
Not everything is about Aaron, Call said, which made him feel even more terrible. It wasn't Aaron's fault he was who he was. Call was just glad Aaron was asleep again, his blonde head resting on Havoc's fur.
Then what is this about, Call? Tamara said. Because I have a feeling you know.
Words felt like they were clawing their way up Call's throat. He didn't know if he wanted to yell at Tamara or spill everything just for the relief of not keeping it bottled up anymore, when suddenly the car started shaking hard.
Call, slow down, Tamara said.
I am slowed down, he protested. Maybe I should pull over. Suddenly, and without warning, Master Rufus appeared, popping into existence between Call and Tamara in the front seat of the car.
Students, he said, looking very displeased. Would you like to explain yourselves?
Chapter 12. Call and Tamara screamed. The car swerved, Call's hands heedless on the wheel. That made Tamara scream even harder. All the screams woke Jasper and Aaron, who added their voices to the screaming. Havoc started to bark. Throughout all the commotion, Master Rufus just floated in the center of the car, looking annoyed and translucent. That was the final shock. Call slammed on the brakes, and the car screeched to a stop in the middle of the road. Everyone suddenly stopped screaming.
There was a dead silence. Master Rufus continued to be see-through.
"Are you dead?"
Call asked in a shaking voice.
"He's not dead,"
Jasper said, managing to sound smug and annoyed, even though he was clearly terrified.
"He's calling from an ether phone. This is how it looks on the other end."
"Oh." Call filed away the knowledge that the thing he'd always called a tornado phone was actually called something else. He pictured Master Rufus holding the glass jar on his lap, staring into it balefully.
"So you're somewhere else?"
he said to Rufus. "Not actually here?"
"It doesn't matter where I am. What matters is that you children are all in a great deal of trouble,"
Master Rufus said.
"An enormous amount of trouble and also a great deal of danger. Colm Hunt, you are already on thin ice. Aaron Stewart, you are a Makar and you have responsibilities. Responsibilities that include behaving responsibly. And you, Tamara Rajavi. Of the three of you, I expected you to know better."
"Master Rufus," Jasper began in his sweetest tattletale voice, "I'll have you know that I never—"
"As for you, Jasper de Winter,"
Master Rufus said, cutting him off,
"maybe I was wrong about you. Maybe you really are more interesting than I originally imagined. But the four of you must return to the Magisterium immediately."
Jasper looked horrified, probably for several reasons.
"Are you back at the Magisterium?"
Call asked. Master Rufus appeared highly peeved by that question.
"Indeed I am, Colm. After spending most of yesterday and all of today fruitlessly searching for you children, one of you must have lost your protection against scrying. I see that you're in some kind of vehicle. Pull over, tell me where you are, and some mages will be along to get you shortly."
"I don't think we can do that,"
Colm said, heart pounding.
"And why not?"
Master Rufus's eyebrows twitched with barely contained annoyance. Call hesitated.
"Because we're on a mission," Tamara said quickly. "We're going to recover the Alkahest."
"I'm the Makar," Aaron said. "I'm supposed to save people. They're not supposed to save me. They resent having to save me, and I've been told plenty that I can't succeed doing stuff alone, so Call is here to be my counterweight. Tamara is here because she's clever and crafty, and Jasper is—"
"Comic relief?" Call ventured under his breath.
"I'm your friend too, you idiot," Jasper burst out. "I can be clever."
"Anyway," Aaron said, trying to recover the situation, "we're a team and we're getting the Alkahest back, so please don't send any other elementals after us."
"Send any other elementals after you?"
Master Rufus sounded genuinely confused.
"What on earth do you mean?"
"You know what I mean,"
Aaron said in that flat voice he used when he was angry and trying not to show it.
"We all know. Automatonis nearly killed us. And he came from the Magisterium. You released him to hunt us down."
Now Master Rufus looked shocked.
"There must be a mistake. Automatonis is here, our prisoner. He has been for hundreds of years."
"It's not a mistake," Tamara said. "Maybe the other mages didn't tell you because we're your apprentices, but it absolutely happened. Automatonis murdered a woman too, burned her house down."
Tamara's voice shook.
"These are lies,"
Master Rufus said.
"We're not lying,"
Aaron told him.
"But I guess that means you trust us about as much as we trust you."
"Then you're being lied to,"
said Master Rufus.
"I don't know. I don't understand yet, but you must come back to the Magisterium. It's more important now than ever. This is the only place where I can protect you."
"We're not coming back."
Surprisingly, Jasper was speaking. He turned to Call, "Hang up the phone." Call stared at ghostly Rufus.
I don't know how."
"Earth," Tamara yelped. "Earth is the opposite of air.
Right. Call reached down and grabbed Miri out of the sheath on his belt. Metal had earth magic properties. Sorry, he said, and plunged the knife into ghostly Rufus. Rufus disappeared with a pop, like a burst bubble. Tamara screamed.
I didn't kill him, did I?
Call said, looking around at everyone's shocked faces. Only Havoc seemed unmoved. He'd gone back to sleep.
No, Jasper said. It's just most people just use the earth power to shut down the connection. But I guess that's a lot of restraint to expect from you, weirdo.
I'm not a weirdo, Call grumbled, sheathing his blade.
You're a little weird, Aaron said.
Oh, yeah? Well, who lost their protective rock? Call demanded. Who forgot to transfer it to their new clothes?
Tamara groaned in frustration. That's how the mages found us.
Jasper, did you?
Jasper held up his hands, flummoxed.
That's what that rock was. No one told me.
Now isn't the time to worry about this, Aaron insisted. We made some mistakes. The important thing is that we hide from the mages as best we can.
Call went to pull the car back onto the main road when he realized the engine had stalled out. Aaron had to spark the wires all over again while they held their collective breaths, since there were no more cars to take if the Morris conked out on them. A few moments later, though, Aaron had it running once more. Tamara didn't have any more stones, so they took turns passing around the ones they had, so the mages might not scry the right person at the right time. Call drove for the rest of the day and through the night, with the other kids sleeping in shifts. Call didn't sleep, though. At each rest stop, he acquired more and more coffee until he felt as though his head was going to spin around like a top and then pop right off. The landscape had changed, becoming more mountainous. The air was cooler, and pine trees took the place of mulberry and dogwood.
I could drive for a while, Tamara offered, coming out of a gas and grub in Maine.
Dawn was breaking by then, and Call had been caught at least once driving with a single eye open. Aaron had bought a Butterfinger and a honey bun and was mashing the candy bar into the pastry to make a bizarre sugar hot dog. Call approved. Jasper ate pretzels and stared.
No, Call said, taking a swig from his coffee. One of his eyes twitched a little, but he ignored it. I've got this.
Tamara shrugged and handed the directions to Jasper. It was his turn to navigate.
I refuse, Jasper said, taking a long look at Call. You need to sleep. You're going to drive into a ditch and we're going to die, all because you won't take a nap. So take a nap.
I'll set an alarm, Tamara offered.
I could stretch my legs, said Aaron. Go ahead. Lie down in the back seat.
Now that they mentioned it, Call was feeling kind of fuzzy-headed.
Okay,
he said, yawning.
But just for 20 minutes. Dad used to say that that was the ideal amount of time for a nap.
We'll take Havoc for a real walk, Tamara said. See you in 20.
Call climbed into the back seat. But when he closed his eyes, what he saw was Master Rufus, his eyes going wide as Call drew Miri and stabbed the image of him.
His expression had reminded Call of the way his father had looked right before Call used magic to slam him against a wall. Despite being exhausted, Call couldn't stop his brain from showing him those images over and over again. And as soon as he shoved those images away, new ones rose up to take their place, images of things that hadn't happened yet, but might. The look of betrayal on Aaron's face when he discovered who Call really was. The look of fury on Tamara's. Jasper's smug certainty that he'd been right about Call all along. Finally he gave up and got out of the car. Early morning sunlight dappled the grass, and the music of distant birdsong hung in the air.
Aaron and Tamara and Havoc were gone, but Jasper was sitting at a worn old picnic table. Sparks flew from his fingers as he set fire to a pine cone, and then watched it turn to embers.
"You're supposed to be asleep," Jasper said.
"I know," Call told him.
"But I wanted to talk to you about something, while the others aren't here."
Jasper narrowed his eyes.
"Oh, going behind your friends' backs? This should be interesting."
Call sat down at the picnic table. The wind had picked up and it was blowing his hair into his eyes.
"When we get back to the destination on the map, hopefully my father is going to be there and he's still going to have the Alkahest. But I need to talk to him. Alone.
About what?"
"He'll listen to me. But not if he thinks a bunch of apprentices are going to attack him. And I don't want Aaron getting too close in case my dad does try to hurt him. I need you and Tamara and Aaron to keep back, at least until I finish my conversation."
"Why are you telling me this?" Jasper still looked suspicious, but not unconvinced. Call couldn't tell him the truth. That it was easier to lie to Jasper than to his friends.
"Because you care about protecting Aaron a lot more than you care about protecting me."
"True," said Jasper. "He's the Makar. You're just..." He looked curiously at Call.
"I don't know what you are."
"Yeah, well," Call said. "That makes two of us." Before Jasper could say anything else, Tamara and Aaron appeared from between the trees, Havoc bounding around excitedly beside them. Call slid off the bench.
"What's he so happy about?"
"He ate a squirrel." Tamara sounded disapproving. As Call headed toward the car, he bent down to pet Havoc's head and whispered,
"Good dog. Excellent hunting instincts. We eat squirrels, not people, am I right?"
"Never too early to start molding his character," Aaron said.
"That's what I was thinking."
Together, Call and Aaron helped heave a reluctant Havoc into the back seat. Jasper and Tamara climbed in after him, and Aaron took the passenger seat. The moment they all sat down, the doors of the car slammed shut in unison.
"What's going on?"
Tamara demanded. She scrabbled at her door, but it wouldn't open. None of their doors would budge.
"Start the car, Aaron!"
Aaron reached across Call for the wires, trying to get a spark. Nothing happened. No sound of the engine turning over. He did it again and again. Sweat started to prickle along Call's back. What was going on? From the back seat, Jasper shouted,
"I tried to use metal magic and sparks hurt my hand instead."
"It must be warded," said Tamara. Something swooped in front of the windshield. Call yelled and Aaron jerked back, wires dropping from his hands. Two huge air elementals had appeared in front of the car. One of them looked like a six-legged horse, if horses were about twice the size they normally were. The other one resembled a brontosaurus with wings. Both were bridled and saddled. Master Rockmaple was riding one, and Master Milagros the second.
"We are in so much trouble," said Jasper.
Master Milagros slid from the back of her six-legged horse and stalked over to the car. She lifted her hands, spread her fingers, and hurled from her palms long threads of glimmering metal wires. They wrapped around the front of the car, and within seconds it was tightly secured. As she performed her metal magic, Milagros looked through the windshield at the kids. She shook her head, disapprovingly, but Colum thought she looked a little bit as if she found the whole thing funny. She whirled around without a word to them and marched back to the elementals. She tossed a rope of metal to Rockmaple and climbed back up onto her own elemental, securing her rope to the pommel of the saddle.
"Oh my God," said Tamara. "We've got to get out of here."
She threw herself against her door, but the car was already rising into the air like the basket below a balloon. Everyone in the car shrieked as maps and empty soda cans and candy bar wrappers flew off the dashboard and out of the cup holders and rattled around inside the car.
What are they doing?
Call yelled over the sound of the wind.
Taking us to the Magisterium, what do you think?
Jasper yelled back.
They're going to fly us to Virginia? Won't someone normal, you know, notice?
They're probably using air magic to block us from view,
Tamara said. Then she yelped as the car swung out over the forest below. All Call could see beneath them were miles of green trees.
In movies, people pretend to be sick to get their jailers to let them out,
Aaron told them.
Maybe one of us could try throwing up or frothing from the mouth.
Like we're rabid?
Call asked.
We don't have time to argue,
Tamara said, reaching into her satchel, clearly completely panicked, and coming out with a little bottle of clear liquid.
I have hand soap. Quick, Jasper, drink it. You'll definitely froth.
I am not drinking that, Jasper said. I am a De Winter. We do not froth.
Aaron squinted at the air elementals pulling their car like a sled, as though he was reconsidering his own plan.
I'm not sure they'd hear us if we shouted anyway.
Wait, said Call, turning in his seat. I've watched my dad work on cars my whole life. You know what goes really early? The floor pan. Look down, it's rusted, right? All we have to do is kick.
For a moment, they all just stared at him. Then Tamara started kicking the floor with a vengeance. Havoc leaped up onto the seat, whining as Aaron climbed over the passenger seat to help. After three kicks, his booted foot went right through.
This is going to work!
Jasper shouted, as much with surprise as with anything else. A few more kicks and they were able to peel back the floor of the car. Tamara looked over at Call, and then Aaron.
Ready?
She asked.
I've got Havoc, Call said. Wait, who's got me?
Jasper asked. But Call ignored him and, grabbing hold of his wolf and his backpack, jumped out into the dark nothingness below the car. Havoc yipped, limbs flailing, tail cycling. Above him, Call saw Tamara leaping out, her hair flying up in the blue sky. A moment later, he saw what he thought was Aaron shoving Jasper through the hole, then Aaron appeared, falling through the air. Call drew on the air, weaving an invisible net of magic around and beneath him. His fall slowed, and Havoc stopped barking as they descended steadily into the woods below. Call hit the ground on his back, but the impact was light. He let go of Havoc, who rolled to his feet, his eyes wild. Call wasn't sure exactly where they were and cursed himself for, in his panic, not remembering the map. But a moment later he realized that he couldn't have found their place on it anyway. Even if they'd had it, it would have been useless. Beside him, Havoc whined, looking up in the sky, as though he might be forced to fly again at any moment. He barked as Tamara drifted down gracefully, her dark braid floating up around her head. She alighted on a fallen log, a huge smile on her face.
That was amazing, she said. I always thought I liked fire magic the best, but air...
Wham!
Jasper slammed down onto a pile of pine needles. A moment later, Aaron touched down beside him, his arms crossed, looking furious.
You let me fall,
Jasper moaned. I did not, Aaron said defensively. He said he could do it himself. He said he'd be fine. Seems okay to me, said Call. Tamara shot him a quelling look and ran over to Jasper, who pushed himself half upright.
Ow!
Jasper muttered, collapsing again.
Ow, ow, ow!
Tamara was leaning over Jasper, who was milking the attention for all it was worth.
The pain, he said. The agony!
Aaron, don't you have a first aid kit in your backpack?
Tamara said.
Yeah, but I left my backpack behind.
Aaron scanned the sky.
How long do you think before they notice they're hauling an empty car?
Probably not very long, Tamara said. We need to hide.
Right, Aaron said. Stand back, Tamara, Jasper.
He reached out a hand and caught Call's wrist.